So the word is three goats.
Tree goats or three goats?
Goats.
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 Three or tree?
Three. This is a good storytelling. Anyway, they were called the Three Billy Goats Gruff. Right?
Right.
A long time ago.
In a galaxy far, and, far away.
And they were headed to the meadows in the mountains to eat and get fat. You're allowed to ask questions.
I want to know what they're eating now.
Grass.
Oh, okay. I thought it would be more interesting. Maybe flowers, you know?
Well, if we went for a modernization, they went to the mountains to perhaps smoke the grass and get high.
Were they?
This is not that
Dutch
kind of a fairy
goats?
Tale. No, Norwegian goats, so probably just.
They would have to be very law abiding, generally.
Mm, yeah.
Okay.
And they went up to the mountain and they came to the stream, a very steep stream with a bridge over it. And they had to cross the bridge, as you do.
Goats are like old hands at this, though, right? Like, have you seen goats climbing up the side of a dam? They can deal with a bridge, I'm thinking.
The bridge part is easy, right? So the first, the smallest, the youngest goat, he went out on a bridge, tripping out, tick, 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 right? And suddenly they heard a large, bouldering voice from beneath. Who are you who walks on my bridge?
Oh, I'm just the tiniest little billy goat.
Oh, this is a Norwegian folktale, so perhaps not an attempted Scottish accent, but...
No, just keep doing the goat voice. That's great. You can do that for the rest of the episode if you like.
Let's do it. Let's have a Norwegian goat.
Please.
I'm just a little goat. headed for the mountain to eat and get fat. No, you aren't. I'm going to eat ya. Because I'm a troll, and trolls have to eat the goats. Such is life. Oh, well then. No, I'm not a professional audiobook narrator. I just realized. Well then, but if you don't want to eat me, really, because I'm so tiny and meager, and perhaps you could try my older brother. He's a bit larger than me, a bit more meat on his bone, to say it so. Is that okay? The goat makes the troll think. Perhaps you have a point. Okay, you can go then. And the little bitsy, tiny billy goat went over the bridge and waited for his two older brothers. So the second billy goat stepped out. Somehow he was clueless of the troll. There's some weird audio dynamics going on here.
Yeah, well, maybe it was a very long bridge and he couldn't quite hear the conversation.
Yeah. This is movie logic. You just have to step aside 1 meter to have a private conversation.
Sound falls off very fast in the movies.
Anyways, he went out on a bridge. And once again, the voice from beneath. Who are you who walks on my bridge? And, well now the trolls, the troll knows who it is, but he has to ask because this is a fairy tale, so yeah. I'm just the midst of the pack, the second largest billy goat. I'm headed to the mountains to eat and get fat.
I assume this is the sensible middle child.
I'm also gonna read some Proust and and do my finals.
It would have been funnier if I'd said sensible middle kid, now that I think about it. Moving on.
No, you aren't. I'm going to eat ya. Oh, well then, I figure that's how nature goes down. But If you reconsider, I have an older brother. He's a bit larger and already a bit fatter than me. So perhaps you could, well, just let me pass and there will be a lovely dessert waiting for you. Well, there seems to be a pattern here, but, well then, a larger goat indeed seems more, well, I'm quite hungry, so yeah, okay, sure, you can pass. In this case, they may pass, actually.
Either.
And the sensible middle-sized mid-of-pack goat, he went over the bridge and waited with the smallest. It would be practical if they had their own names.
Yeah, do you want to go back and edit that in after?
And that is not how this fairy tale goes, though. But yeah, okay. So finally, the oldest, the largest, the most packed goat stepped out on the bridge.
Is this the brother that's been kind of working out at the gym a little bit, looking after himself?
Yeah, this is a goat bro.
Episode title. That's funnier in Norwegian.
How?
Goat bridge.
Goat bridge.
Goat bro. I mean, geit bro.
Geit bro?
Yeah.
How is that funny?
Bridge, but bro.
Oh, pun.
Ah.
Too early for puns.
Okay.
Okay, so the oldest went out on the bridge. Click, clack, click, clack, right? That's how.
Why do you not have children? This is a wasted opportunity.
This is the reason I don't have children. Who are you who walks on my bridge? Well, I'm the oldest goat. Oh, I forgot Norwegian goat. Oh, I'm the oldest goat.
This guy needs to cut down the steroids.
I'm headed to the mountains to eat and, well, get somewhat fatter. Oh, no, you aren't, because I'm coming up and I'm going to eat ya. And I know for a fact that you don't have any older brothers, so don't try that trick with me. Well, just come up and try then. And this gave the troll some hesitation. Where's this self-esteem coming from? He's not used to this. But being a troll, he has to eat.
Also not too bright, right?
Not too bright. Mm. He hadn't sort of read all the way through Proust, I guess.
I guess. He's a remedial troll.
Yeah, so anyway, the troll rises and you can feel the mountainside shaking. And he pops his head, like, from under the bridge and sees the goat. And he's horrified because this is a pretty packed goat. You said it, steroids. Mm. He's been to the gym. Mm. He's done CrossFit, all that. And this is the moment where the oldest billy goat, Gruff.
The suspense is killing me here.
Yeah, not came into problems here because I don't know the English language for describing the next situation.
More coffee, yeah. More coffee is reached for.
Situation.
Tell me in Norwegian. But not before you drink more coffee.
Wait for it. Well, I guess the oldest billy goat just knocks the troll down the stream with his horns.
What would you, a butted?
Butted, perhaps. Mm. Head butted.
Mm. Or just butted. Goat's butt. Yeah.
And that's the end of it. Then they all went to
meadows. There was this big build up and like
ate and get fat.
And then there's just one butt.
Yeah. And the troll, well, I guess he didn't survive.
Is there a moral to this story? Apart from buck passing, which also is a pun, I guess.
What do you think?
Well, in my considered opinion as a learned scholar, I'd like it if more of these stories had a point. And I guess the point here is maybe to, like, pass it upstairs. But that seems like a lame-ass point. Where's the personal responsibility?
So this was one of the first fairy tales I remember.
Is this a Grimm's fairy tale?
No.
Okay.
It's a true Norwegian fairy tale.
It's just that we have it too.
Undoubtedly, it is also not. Because these fairy tales, they tend to be being older than time.
Right.
Yeah.
Like the troll.
Retold for generations. Right. So, yeah. But do you have it?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. It is a familiar tale.
Exactly the same?
I think so. I'm struggling to remember what the kind of the point of the original is, if it isn't just exactly as you described. But often there are siblings in threes, right? Like three little pigs.
Yes, so you're talking about the recurrent fairy tale structure and all the elements.
Oh
and
boy,
stuff.
You're making it sound grand. I was just joying, honestly.
But the three little pigs, that's an entirely other thing.
It is an entirely other thing, but I note the threes. Then there's three blind mice.
Yeah, threes, that's a recurring number.
It is.
But this fairy tale about the goats specifically is presented by Wikipedia, which is almost never wrong, as a Norwegian fairy tale.
Interesting. Is this in the Norwegian Wikipedia, though, or is this...
No, this is
in the English language. That is interesting.
And there's no chance that a Norwegian has written this, because it is in English.
Yeah, it's not like any Norwegians can speak or write English at all, better than we can.
The moral of the story.
Hmm.
I guess in sort of a upbringing context, it is perhaps that if there are someone out to get ya, right? You could bring in older siblings
get
to deal with the situation.
Right.
It's okay to sort of let others help you out. Anywho, so that's one thing. But thinking about this fairy tale, wouldn't it be more economically rational of the troll to wait until they came back?
Because
the premise is that they... Well, is this a marshmallow test?
I worry that trolls are not amazing with delayed gratification. I'm not sure that... Trolls seem to be all about kind of ego and, like, you know, I want what I want right now. I'm not sure they're great.
You managed to wait for the oldest brother, though.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's maybe stretching the kind of troll delayed gratification capacity.
But we agree that it would be more sensible to wait until they came back and indeed
then
were
they'd
fatter.
Be fatter.
Yeah.
I don't think troll logic extends that far.
I also wonder if we could combine this fairy tale with the corn, chicken, and fox.
If I send the oldest brother first across the bridge with the bag of grass and the stack of stroop waffles.
Are there a situation in this fairy tale where the troll could optimize and get it all?
Hmm. There's a good joke here about the prisoner's dilemma, but I can't. One does talk about on the horns of a dilemma, so I feel that's the goat connection there. Hi, you've just tuned into the free association error.
AKA small differences.
Yeah.
Today we're talking about fairy tales, folklore. But first we have to do some follow-up. This was just a teaser.
Right. You want to start?
I think this is yours.
Oh, this is my domain here.
It's quite a context switch, but all right. Well done.
Mike Smith sent us really good. I really like this. So he kind of managed to send the most on-topic follow-up tweet ever, which is we were talking about bagpipes in the previous episode, and he sent a link to a documentary about a guy called Martin Bennett, who was a Scottish piper who died of cancer, unfortunately, 12 years ago, but who, while he was alive, he recorded really interesting, he did really interesting stuff. He was a piper, I think, but he travelled around and tried to make Scottish music more contemporary, maybe, by kind of getting traditional artists to sing and then sampling them and then reusing the stuff. And the whole documentary is really nice. It's really interesting. It's called Grit, which is like a bonus kind of extra on topic for us since we talked about the Grit class, if not actual Grit. And it's just really good. And it's I think, a half hour. And it's totally worth watching for this guy who just seemed like a really sweet guy and did all these kind of interesting things with music to try and make Scottish folk maybe more contemporary, and yeah, kind of a loss really, so that was lovely, lovely to watch.
And did where can it? People find the links to that?
Good point. Yeah, we totally forgot to mention the website last time. We should do better. If you go to smalldifferences.fireside.fm, you can find links to all of this stuff that we talk about in the episodes, and a link to our Twitter account, which we never remember to mention anymore but still exists, Small for Scheller, which is Small Differences, and the spelling obviously is included on the website. No one is going to spell that out today.
That's a goat out.
Oh. Goat puns at 7:30 in the morning.
Segway. If you don't want to interact with the internets, you can probably go into your podcast catcher or podcast app and find all the links there.
Right.
Right in the interface.
Right. Can you talk a bit more about that for people who are confused?
Can I? Well, the segue is that Mike T, Mike Tufteki, was that?
Tufteki, I'm not sure.
Ah, but it is sort of a podcast thing to mangle names.
It is, yeah. Yes.
I'm sorry.
We wouldn't be doing our job as podcasters if we weren't mangling someone's surname.
Anywho, he had some concerns about the length of the show. And he is not the only one.
No.
We have weekly demonstration outside.
With placards.
Yeah. We claim the artistic license. We cannot be packed in less than at least an hour.
Yeah, it takes us a little while to get up to speed sometimes, but we feel that there's enough useful meat in the first half hour to not cut it.
Also, we are very important, busy consultants, and we do not have the time to make a full-scale production.
Yeah, radical editing does not fit. So, but the flip side of this is that you can actually do clever stuff to find the different bits of the show.
Yeah, if you can decrypt the chapter names, I guess.
Well, they're perfectly self-explanatory. Yeah, chapters are in.
You have chapters. What is chapters?
I guess they're bookmarks in the different sections of the podcast, which mean that you can kind of listen to a chapter and then stop if you want, and it kind of wraps up a topic and moves on in the sense, in as much as we ever wrap up a topic. But we try and put the breaks between chapters at points where we kind of switch topic. We try.
But also, this is a worry because it sounds like people are listening for some kind of coherence and...
Oh, boy. Yeah, and
rationale or something.
Sorry about that. Wrong podcast. Try something else. Try Radiolab. They're very well produced.
Yeah. Think of this podcast as a stream, indeed. And you can just close it and open it again later.
Right.
And you probably won't lose that much.
Right. But also, in addition to having chapters, your podcast app will probably, hopefully, also show you all the links. So if you use Overcast, certainly, that will show you all the links. I haven't tried downloading our podcast on Castro, but I imagine it will do the same. I don't know what the native Apple one does.
I think the native Apple one also show the show notes, but not the chapters.
Right, so get a better podcast app than the native one on iOS if you're an iPhone person.
Pick and mix progress.
Yeah.
Or pick and mix progress.
Either. We talked before about how the fact that pick and mix bags, candy bags here, are like basically the size of your head. And I guess the back end of last week, I thought, I'm going to get some pick and mix because sometimes that's nice to do. And I went to the store and there's a tiny bag. I have a picture. And it's a tiny bag that could just sit on my hand. And in addition, there was a helpful message on the side to remind me that it's okay, like, to have just a few. So it was. I saw this as a very interesting reaction to the bag that could fit over your head kind of direction that general candy buying and weighing is going for. And this was genuinely a small one, which seemed to be motivating me to maybe buy less candy.
This is an interesting turn.
I was not expecting this. I'll find the picture.
What does it mean?
I really struggled with it. Like, short of state intervention, I couldn't figure out why this would be happening, right? Because, like, it's not in the interests of the supermarket where I found this to sell me less candy. It makes no sense commercially.
I wonder if it is part of a bigger trend in marketing. Because there are some elements of promoting healthier food and so on at the supermarkets. For example, one of the branches, Kiwi, has this thing where how they pack it in is that they take half the tax from vegetables, which they technically don't do, that, but it's just a fancy way of saying that they sell vegetables cheaper.
I'm fascinated. So, but where is this coming from? It's not coming from the supermarkets themselves, is it? Like, who's incentivizing them to behave responsibly?
It is, because it is a marketing thing. Somebody has done research, and the feedback group said that, we quite like it when the supermarkets are promoting healthy lifestyles. We would go to those.
I'm trying to imagine this conversation happening in the UK, and I'm struggling. Maybe. I mean,
didn't Jamie Oliver try?
He did. He did, like, a whole thing. And it got people talking about the five-a-day thing and, like, you know, how you're supposed to have this many fruit and veg. But I don't think I would have expected a supermarket to be leading on, how about you eat less and buy less of our food?
To be cynical, perhaps they can assume, or just people will buy food.
We need to eat.
Wouldn't that be a pretty stable? How much fluctuation can it be in food consumption?
You mean, like, across the board, people are still going to buy the same amount of food and broadly the same amount of calories? Because I think the food argument is a good one. I don't buy the calories argument. I think people buy food and they think about food as quantity rather than calories.
Yeah.
I've got no data to back this up. This is just me pulling stuff out my ass, though. Sorry. Don't eat that.
Welcome to the pseudoscience podcast.
Right.
Or perhaps the plausible hypothesis podcast.
Yeah, because truthiness is, like, almost as good as actual data, right? Right? We're very
truthy. We just asked the questions.
Right. Yeah, look, see the photo that I just shared with you. It says on the side of the bag, which I'm holding on the palm of my hand in this picture, remember that just a few pieces is enough.
I think this is a ploy. This is to appeal to parents. Because parents perhaps tend to not want to buy their kids these head-sized bags of candy. Because of the popular myth of sugar and hyperactivity.
Just a myth?
It is.
I don't know.
I think it's proven that high intake of sugar doesn't make you hyperactive. but the fact that the often the social settings of many children together does.
Cool. Link in the show notes. Right?
Yeah, this is published in...
uh-huh.
Well, there will be studies. So, yeah. And perhaps it's a, sort of a feature of this chain that in this chain, they have the small bags. So you don't have to buy that much candy for your spoiled child.
Mm. I wonder if people's decision to shop at supermarket A or supermarket B would actually pivot on whether the candy bags were small. But maybe it's just one of those small nudges towards, you know, if you like other things in the store. Hmm. Interesting. Anyway, sorry, that was long follow-up for a small thing. Small what?
Two bullet points here.
Mm.
Chris is German now, and Chris interacted with Norwegian state. This is a worrying combination.
Yeah, latest in people guessing where I'm from, Germany.
Why?
Couldn't say. We had only exchanged a couple of sentences at that point in the conversation, but I don't know whether it's a combination of physical appearance and...
In Norwegian?
Oh, yeah.
Hmm. No, you don't sound German.
Yeah, I know.
German,
I would have a soft R, right? I'd have a skarre R, and I really don't have that. So...
Yeah, and listen to all the jokes I don't... That I would have
next
now.
Week. don't joke about it next week either.
Ah, next week.
Oh.
Next week in Berlin.
Mm.
Hmm. And you interacted with Norwegian state twice.
I did. This is cool. Okay, so first, I did my tax return, which was less painful than it would have been in the UK. And in fact, I would not have done as someone employed by a company that I do not own myself. I would not have done my own tax return in the UK. It would have been automatically done for me as an employee. It would just have kind of automatically happened.
Yeah?
Yep.
And it didn't?
Huh?
How automatically?
Like, you never have to, as an employee of a company where you are not the owner of the company, you never have to think about your tax return in the UK. It just gets done. It's all taken care of by... the mechanisms that exist, the fact that the company exists and has employees who get paid salaries and blah, blah, blah. You never have to think about it, your personal tax return. The exemptions start to occur if you own a business or a consultancy or whatever. You start having to do your own returns for those things. But just if you're just employed by a company and you just go to work every day and at the end of the month you get paid, you never have to think about it.
But if you have a mortgage, for example?
That's your problem. You deal with that. But that has nothing to do with your personal tax return.
Because in Norway,
you declare
you get
it, right?
Money back, right? So if you pay rent and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It doesn't feature. That's between you and... I mean, no, I don't think it does, genuinely. I was the holder of a mortgage and an employee of a company, and the two never mixed. Hmm. It was just completely irrelevant how I spent my private money.
Because in Norway, it's, I guess, semi-automatic... Because most of the stuff are filled out for you.
Right, you just log in and...
And your responsibility is to check if it's correct. Mm. And, well, I guess now, if you don't do anything, it's just entered. But you have the opportunity to check if this is correct, if you have all your deductibles in place. And if you don't, you can fill them in and pay even less tax.
Mm.
Or not so much.
Yeah.
So that's the mechanism.
Yeah. So I thought it was really interesting. Yeah. The UI was awful, like genuinely really terrible and much in need of overhaul. Which every Norwegian knows.
Yeah, you are the first one to point that out.
Yeah, I'm sure.
At least it didn't crash in the midst of it.
Oh God, does that happen?
It did.
For you?
No, because I'm not one of those who on sort of the... moment it opens, goes into it to fill it out. I'm a procrastinator.
I did mine on the last day of the month. But I'm a responsible person. Mm. This was personal. Like in my job, I'm extremely responsible. But in my personal life, Anyway, so that was my interaction. It was pretty painless. Like I've done, I own a company type tax returns in the UK and it's hugely complicated and very, very difficult to understand what is required without bringing in professional help. if you don't understand it to begin with. And this was relatively easy. I just sat down and I could even do it in English. I didn't have to do it in Norwegian. I really wanted to do it in Norwegian, but at the same time, I just wanted to get it over and done with. So in the end, I just did it in English to make it easier and to make sure that I actually understood the questions properly and wasn't, you know, like sending false information or whatever.
Would it be taxing if you had to?
I'm in pain. Physical pain. My other interaction with the Norwegian state was actually not with the government, but with the local commune. So the, I guess, the local council, local regional government. And they sent me a text message out of the blue and said, the kommuneplan for Oslo is now awaiting your feedback. And what they meant by this was, here is our vision for the next sort of 10, 15 years about what we want to do with how Oslo as a city will develop, what we think about the built environment, how we want to see that change, how we want to be responsible in how that changes, what this is going to mean for building, what this is going to mean for... I'm unnerved now because you're smiling, but I'm going to carry on. What this is going to mean for the social thing. So like the communal plan splits into two things. One of them is basically about built environment, as far as I can tell. And the other is about the social implications of a capital city, which is expanding a lot and there's a lot of building work and so on. And what I find interesting about this is that I got a text message asking me for my opinion. And this is a topic that people get really exercised about, but also the newspapers write about. And I was talking about this with my husband, and he sort of said, and I really agree with this, that like in the UK, what will happen is you'll get like some notices posted up, often like on paper, laminated paper, that go up around saying, this roundabout will change. You know, as of this date, if you have any problems, go to the council offices and look at the plans, or, you know, whatever, go to this website. But that's the extent of the discussion. And the extent of the discussion, certainly in Oslo, is much broader. It takes up a lot of column inches in the newspapers, and there's a lot more engagement, and people have opinions about it. And sure, those opinions probably revolve around, yeah, what does this mean for my area? But the fact that the conversation is happening at all is really cool. And what I don't have is a good basis for comparison. In London, the conversation happens somewhat at a city level, but it tends to be quite local in focus, and it isn't this sort of broad brush comment on everything. Not so much, anyway.
Knowing you, you probably had a small notebook with comments submitted.
I have not yet. I have not yet committed any comments.
But you were a victim for a hearing, it sounds like.
Say more?
If you remember the column we discussed last time, from the Finnish Sanna Samura. One of her beefs, yeah, with the Norwegian culture were the fact that we were a bit too democratic.
I'm okay with that. I think this is a conversation that affects everyone who lives in Oslo, so why not involve everyone who lives in Oslo? Or at least give them the option to be involved. Is there such a thing as too democratic? Hand grenade, popcorn, running away. I'm just going to conduct the rest of this podcast in emoji.
So I guess we ruined a perfectly good segue about pain. But I found a brother from another mother.
Right.
This journalist in Bergens Tidende, the local newspaper in Bergen, he had a small... What do you call this genre?
I'm not sure, like a...
A small kind of musing, perhaps.
Maybe, like it was a kind of a cri de coeur, I guess, like the French, right? Like a cry from the heart, like it was this sort of wail, a small wail of pain.
And he talked about not having an accent or having his own accent or dialect and being asked all the time.
Mm. He had moved around a lot.
Yeah. Where are you from? And it was good for me to find another one.
They do exist. I think this is a a very Norwegian pain, because if there is not a ready answer to that question, you are just opening up a world of hurt, right? Like, does the person want the response you're about to give them?
His point is that mostly you say, well, I moved around a lot, and I know I speak weird, but and most people, they are fine with that. The case is closed, right? But then you have some people looking at you. They want to dissect it.
Sorry, have I overstepped the mark here?
No, you haven't. But
people want to know sometimes. There are people who are accent curious.
Yeah, and let's start to ask you these tests. Do you say jeg or eg, right? So on. And you suddenly are reduced to this dialect casus. This lab rat.
I'm sorry for the questions.
I'm a person. In a way, you can say that I'm a minority.
I guess. Do you feel oppressed?
A bit. Dialect oppressed.
You get a tax, like, you get like a tax rebate for being an oppressed minority in this way.
The election's coming up, perhaps.
You and that guy, you're a constituency of two, but
we're going to have elections this fall.
Ah.
This is promising.
I don't get a vote. I have a slightly more pressing election.
Yeah. You had yours.
No, we got another one.
Another one? Mm. Yeah, that's true.
And then there might be another one again.
This is good for podcasting, though. Much to discuss.
Oh, okay. I'm not psychologically prepared for that conversation today, but that's fine. We have other things to talk about.
We have to close follow-up soon.
Yeah.
Should we drill a hole into it, perhaps?
This is yours.
But you are the boring enthusiast.
You give with one hand, you take away with the other. All right, Norwegians, drilling, Elon Musk.
Say no more.
We'll put a link in. It's great. But I want to tell you the thing that I told you in Slack, which is great. When I was growing up in the Yellow Pages, which was where you would find all the kind of lists of companies and plumbers and electricians and anyone that you would conceivably want to call. If you looked up boring, it said, see civil engineers. And this made me laugh every time. All right. Link in the show notes.
Insert Dilbert comic strip here, I guess.
Final piece of follow-up. Unparliamentary. Mike Smith sent a link talking about Vari Black, who's SNP. I think she's Vari. She's spelt like Vari. I've only ever read her name, but that would make sense. But it might be Mari, but I think it's Vari. Saying, you're talking shite, hen, which is very unparliamentary language indeed. She's super young. She's ballsy as fuck. It's awesome. I don't care if she was unparliamentary. I'm pretty sure that, like, she had a point.
Was it effective?
I couldn't say. I have not followed it up. I've been slightly superficial in my treatment of this. But that's how we do unparliamentary language in the UK. Thank you very much.
Right. I forgot to bring in an example from Norway, but because you mentioned it last time, but we didn't exemplify it. Let's save that for the season of politics coming this fall on small differences.
Brackets, hell on earth. Sure.
Once upon a time...
There were two podcasters who had promised that they would talk about folklore and fairy tales.
Yeah, a astringent topic.
A what now?
Can you say that in English? Astringent?
I don't think so.
You can now.
Okay.
This is the podcast where I invent...
You coin new English words, that's great. What does it mean?
Astringent. Yeah, you can say that. That's a word.
Really? Astringent?
Yeah.
What is happening?
Of regulations, requirements, or conditions. Strict, precise, and exacting.
Stringent.
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 Yeah.
But you... That's the one on you. You should recognize
what I am with the missing letters and the wrong vowels. Yeah, you're right. That was all me. I'm sorry.
You are the Norwegian English bridge here, and I'm the troll.
Yeah, there's a lot of weight on me. All right. Folklore. I started thinking about this, and one of the things that I think was made it hard to just think of Scottish folktale / mythology / folklore stuff last time was that I grew up with the European stuff, right? Like, when you are a kid in the UK, well, when I was a kid in the UK, Grimm's fairy tales all the way, baby. I'm actually struggling. I'm looking at this list just going, I don't recognise any of these titles at all, but I bet I do. I bet there are loads on this page that I actually do, just the names are different. And it's all the kind of, what's it even called, with the gingerbread house and the witch in the forest, Hansel and Gretel, all that kind of stuff, right? And presumably that's a thing here.
The Brothers Grimm fairy tales?
Yeah, things like Hansel and Gretel. And yeah. So a lot of what you learn as fairy stories, fairy tales in the UK growing up are hardcore European stuff, because that just got really popularised. Rumpelstiltskin, there you go, there's another one. The Golden Goose. These ring your bells? Snow White?
Yeah, I'm just noticing how you're somewhat implying that the UK isn't a part of the Europe.
Not really, more so...
Deeming them European.
Central European. This is a persistent language tick.
You can say German. Or
doesn't it predate...
Prussian or something.
Does it not predate the German state, as it is? Yeah, I was going to say...
Also predates Europe for that.
Central European kind of stuff, right? Like, this is a persistent kind of language tick in the UK to refer to Europe as something other. And I don't feel that at all, but it comes out in the way I talk, I think, because the UK is an island and it behaves like one. And it behaves like Europe is over there. But in terms of being European, I am European. I feel European. I'm European and from my cold, dead hand with the whole passport thing. I got nothing. My point was, I think, that they were not quote-unquote Scottish things that I was growing up with. They were quote-unquote European things.
And here's the difference, I guess. But yeah, I guess the experience would be different, perhaps, if we went to your neighbour in Scotland.
Well, they were probably of non-Scottish descent as well, but yeah. Okay.
To your Scottish, your true like Scottish neighbour.
Yeah, yeah. No, there were some, know. Yeah.
Yeah.
There are Scottish... Scottish sort of folk tales and stuff like that. More the kind of the figures. Like, what I didn't come away with was an awful lot of stories. What I came away with was more kind of traditional figures and mythological creatures.
But we had these stories in school. It featured very prominently, at least.
How old were you?
Well, when we started school and so on. And in kindergarten.
Mm. Don't remember. Yeah, maybe a little bit of telling of those stories. St. George and the Dragon, I remember from being quite small.
And also they were this is my culture pick eventually, but they were also filmed, or there were movies.
Disney or other?
No, other.
Say more. Like what?
Well, let's just jump right into it.
Mm,
because there was a filmatization of these fairy tales, Norwegian fairy tales, by this, I guess he was an animator, but no, a sort of puppeteer. He made puppet films of them.
Awesome.
And they were quite technically good. So they were shown on TV and stuff like that. Mm. So
you've linked to Askeladd.
Yeah. Or Boots. It's the English translation of the name.
This looks Swedish.
Yeah, I guess they all look quite, let's see, Nordic, Aryan, something in this kind of movies. But
oh wow,
you have to go a bit into it, because the first part,
yeah, I Wadsworthed it. Well, I'm not gonna lie.
So the first part, it opens with this tableau of this old man. I guess that is meant to be Peter Christer Asbjørnsen.
And easy for you to say.
And two kids, and he starts to tell this story, and then it transitions into the puppet part of it. And Asbjørnsen was one of the two with Jørgen Moe who collected these stories.
So like the Brothers Grimm, but in Scandinavia.
Yeah, the Norwegian Brothers Grimm, you can say. And I did that in the 1840s.
Mm.
So it was after, I guess, the sort of independence. It was in the nation-building era.
Mm.
And the thing with this collection, this book of Norwegian fairy tales compiled from, they actually went through Norway and collected them.
Okay.
So they went to the small villages and talked with the old nans and stuff like that to collect.
They should have shared a tour bus with Ivar Aasen.
Yeah, perhaps they did. But
it's a little early, I think.
At the time, the official language, written language in Norway, were Danish.
Mm.
But they didn't write it in Danish.
What did they write them in?
Proto-bokmål.
Riksmål or something else?
It was kind of like Riksmål, mm. I guess. So it was less Danish and more
folkly.
How Norwegians spoke, but not New Norwegian.
Right.
So it was an important part of the formalization of this language. So yeah.
Hmm.
And that's perhaps why it is also so close to, so present in the Norwegian geist, I guess.
Because it's so tightly knitted to the language.
Yeah, the national identity and language and part of the curricula and stuff like that.
Hmm. See, that's interesting, because I can't at all say the same for, well, to the best of my knowledge anyway, I can't say the same at all for Scottish stories. I mean, what I did find when I was looking at this was I found a lot of kind of little folk tales, which are inconsequential things, actually, often. And they're written down in Scots, which is nice to read. This is not the Scots language podcast episode, I guess, but it's kind of interesting. You know, I don't see a lot of written material. I guess it's the Ninosh, but people almost never write in it traditionally, but these were written down maybe a century ago, and they're written as they would be said, so that was kind of cool. But they're like little things about a robin who's on his way to sing a song to the king, and the cat tries to tempt him by saying, look at this lovely, I'll show you really like a really lovely hair in my tail or something like that if you'll just come a little bit closer, and the robin's like, yeah, nah. And that conversation recurs with all the creatures that could eat the robin, and but the robin's just like, thanks but no thanks. Only, you know, more Scottish than that. And gets to the king and sings a song for the king on his birthday, and the king and the queen decide that was very lovely, and the robin shall be married to the wren, and that's the end of it. And, right, it's like, what's the point of this story? It's fun, though. It's kind of entertaining that this is a story worth being in itself. But at the same time, it's, like, very slight.
Hmm. It is often about this young, spirited, witful man or guy.
Usually. Not always, but usually.
Going to win the princess.
Yeah, that is a recurring feature. Yeah. Per Snow White and Sleeping Beauty and all the stories ever.
Also, most of the Espen Aslad tales has this plot line.
Mm.
And now I'm thinking, well, now I'm sort of taking the outside perspective. How does this come up from an outsider perspective? And the plot line is usually, you have this sort of, he's a bit dirty because he's an ash lad, so he deals with ash somehow. So he's often depicted as he has ash in his face, not in a bad way, just like dirty, and he's a bit quirky as well, does strange things, and it's often he and his older brothers who are more proper or normal, I guess. And they are on a mission to win the princess.
All of them?
Yeah.
Which one's going to win the princess, though?
It's always at the Ashlad because he outsmarts his brothers, right?
Is he the youngest?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Also, he doesn't only win the princess, but half the kingdom.
Wow.
Which I now... What was the half of the kingdom back then? It was perhaps Norway. So... Perhaps it has a political dimension as well, which I had never thought of, which is interesting.
Mm.
Because
all these entitled monarchies.
It means that we learn these fairy tales in school, but we never interpreted them or set them in context.
Well, when you're like 6 years old, it's pretty hard to understand that kind of...
It wasn't only when we were 6 years old.
No.
Later also, because we had about the fairy tale... genre, like all the structures and rules for it.
Like in high school?
Yeah.
Hmm. We never got stuff like that. We did quote-unquote literature.
World literature.
No, very British, very British focused, tragically.
Mm. So yeah. And I would guess that when the people told these stories to Asbjørnsen and Mo, almost certainly they always had a double meaning.
Hmm.
And I guess they were satire and more adult-themed humor and stuff like that,
right,
which were by the priest. One, I think Asbjørnsen was a priest or minister. I guess he... made it, what's the word? Not explicit.
Implicit.
No, as in parental advisory.
Bowdlerized or abridged or censored or...
Yeah, something like that.
Child friendly. Is bowdlerized what I mean? Bowdlerized? I've never said that word aloud. All right.
I think the same thing happened with the Grimm's tale.
Yeah, I think a lot of the gory bits were cut out, right?
Yeah.
If you can cut out a gory bit, which is itself a gory metaphor.
This is just me vaguely remembering, but I don't think there was much gore, perhaps more of the mature adult stuff.
Mature.
Mature.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like Cinderella, right? In the kind of the... at least some of the versions, the ugly sisters in an attempt to fit their shoe in their foot into the shoe so that the prince will marry them because they can prove that, you know, the slipper is theirs, blah, blah, blah. They cut off their own toes. Like, that was pretty standard.
That's more gory. I think in Norwegian fairy tales, it were more... of the sexual stuff and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah. That got just... cut out. I have no... Yeah, there's a whole bunch of like slightly questionable stuff here. How far does it really go with Sleeping Beauty before she woke up?
Moving on.
No, sorry. I'm stuck because I watched 3 Days with the Condor the other night with Robert Redford, which is a really fun movie. It's about the intelligence. It's basically the Bourne movies before 20 years before 30, 40. Many years before they were making Bourne. And it's got everything in there, including a great fight scene. But it has some stuff that, by today's standards, is exceedingly problematic relating to, like, a relationship that's kind of like a really... it wouldn't stand today. It's this kind of Stockholm syndrome, painful, awkward thing. And, yeah, sorry. Anyway, it's a good movie, but that bit is seriously problematic.
Right. So you mentioned that in Scotland it it were more about the perhaps the creatures and the characters,
right,
more than the stories.
Yeah, like there are stories attached to all of these, but they're quite slight little stories. So to give you an example, Kelpies. So Kelpies are water spirits that look like horses. And all the stories about Kelpies basically boil down to they'll try and get you to ride on their backs, but if you do, then they'll take you into the water and drown you.
You're a goner.
You are. And a lot of the stories to do with that sort of thing are kind of, that's the bottom line of the story, is that, you know, this persuasive Kelpie said, oh, come and take a ride on me and blah, 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 and then they take you into the water and drown you. An awful lot of the stories seem to be, don't go into the water. And I don't know if these were invented to kind of persuade children not to go into the water and not to, I don't know, accept rides on strange horses or whatever. I'm not sure Stranger Danger was the thing, but so that's Kelpies. And there's an awesome sculpture in, I think, Falkirk of Kelpies, which is huge and amazing. And we'll put a link in the show notes. And it's just a fantastic piece of sculpture. But there's also the Guinness advert, which sort of riffs on this a little bit, even though Guinness is Irish, which has horses in the sea. They're often called white horses when you can see the kind of the waves breaking at sea when it's a little bit rough. And that's a great advert from, I think, the 80s.
They also featured in the Tolkien, Lord of the Rings, when Gandalf, he spawns horses from the river.
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah.
There you go. Is this a thing in Norway? No. Horses in the water?
I don't think so.
Okay. Another thing, Selkies. Selkies are seals, but they're not. They're seals and people. They can change into people. And the classic story with Selkies is that there's a woman bathing on the shore and a man finds her and falls in love with her and she's a Selkie. And he steals the skin, the seal skin that she's abandoned to be human, and he hides it and basically makes her marry him. And they stay married for many, many years. And then eventually she finds the seal skin and escapes back to the sea. Pretty dark.
I just imagine the disappointment when you wake up with a seal in your bed. Perhaps not disappointment, but
astonishment. They're big creatures. It would be surprising, I feel. This is not how it looked last night. How much beard did I have?
How much Guinness, indeed.
She doesn't transform without her skin. But a cool thing that I read about this, which I didn't know, was that these stories come from Shetland and Orkney, which are very far north islands in Scotland, and it's thought that the myth might have arisen because Sami peoples came over in kayaks and wearing sealskins, and
made weird noises.
Well, I guess so. Yeah, right. Like, who in Scotland is going to understand their language? So, and I guess there was some kind of confusion about the fact that someone could go from being covered in sealskin to looking like a normal person. I don't know. Maybe this is all kind of retcon, sort of post-hoc justification of why these myths arose. But I thought it was pretty interesting.
Interesting. Yeah, it's.
I'm not saying plausible. I'm saying interesting.
Yeah.
Do you have seal myths?
No, don't think so.
But you have seals. Yeah. I've seen them.
Perhaps there is a slight chance that these, when I think of it, the most of the fairy tales in Asbjørnsen and Mo, there are not that much coastal topics going on.
This is fascinating.
It's mostly from the inlands, and not so much from the north. So I guess all the whole corpus of Sami stuff is omitted.
This is interesting because I'd always expected that, like, if you went back 150 years, most of the population of Norway would be really near the coast because a lot of people relied on fishing to live.
Yeah, but the how the national romantic identity were constructed, it was more about the inland farmer in bunad, not so much about the fisherman.
Why is that?
I don't know. I would blame Germany, actually.
You can't keep saying that.
Again, I love the country, I love the countrymen, but the fact is, even the painters, when they were to depict the Norwegian nature, they went to Germany and painted the pictures.
What, because it looked better?
Perhaps it was slightly warmer when you are going to sit outside for hours and paint scenery.
It's very pleasant here in the summer.
I don't know, but yeah.
I mentioned Tamlin before, and there's variations of this story all over, but the long and the short of it is that he goes to live in the Fairy Kingdom. Fairies are like a big recurrent theme in British mythology and Scottish mythology. They're very ambiguous. Their intentions are very ambiguous. They're not really of this world, and sometimes they do things that are kind, and other times they do things that are really destructive and malevolent, and it's not really necessarily to be destructive and malevolent, it's just that they've got their own agenda. And so Tamlin goes, I forget the circumstances that he ends up there, but he ends up there, and then one day he meets a human who's often called Janet. Janet's a very sensible name in English. Like, a Janet will always know what to do. And they fall in love, and he wants to be with her, but he's kind of obliged to be with the fairies. And he says to her, at this time, which might be Halloween, I forget, we're going to be riding through such and such a place on horses, and I will be on the 12th horse, and you have to pull me down. And if you can hold on to me through that, then I'll return to the sort of the world of humans, and I can marry you. And so the day comes, and she does, and she goes, and she pulls down the 12th rider or the 11th rider or whoever it is from the horse. And the fairy queen is like, right, I'm not having this, and starts turning Tamlin into all of these things that Janet wouldn't want to hold on to, like a hot lump of coal or a snake or all of these things. But she holds on, and she holds on, and eventually the fairy queen gives up, basically. And she wins. Ballsy, Janet. I wish there was a word for that didn't imply you had to be, like, in possession of man parts to be good.
There are plenty of words.
All right, give me some.
I guess, well, ballsy has to do with the reproduction system. So if you were to go for the equivalents, you would perhaps go for uterine.
Ovarian?
Yeah.
Doesn't sound very good.
Ovarian? Well, yeah. That can... Ovarian Janet.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean, that's the problem with our language right there. It's gendered. All the language around this stuff is gendered as to cowboy up, to man up. Yeah.
To Janet up.
Yes.
There we have it.
Janet up. All right. We got a Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah.
Is this a thing that you're aware of much? And how?
The marketing campaign has been very effective, I guess. Yeah, of course, but it's perpetuated through lots of stuff. Disney.
Like what? Disney made a Loch Ness... What?
Yeah, well... So Donald Duck, the comic... the comics. The cartoons. That was a large part of... Norwegian culture in the 80s and 90s.
Donald Duck is very big in Scandinavia, so much so that they watch it in Sweden on New Year's on Christmas Eve. But like, what does that have to do with Nessie?
Because Nessie is sometimes featured in these comics or cartoons.
Really?
For example, when Mickey Mouse wanted to investigate what was really going on with the Loch Ness Monster, and he always disclosed it as a fraud, right? And
this is news to me. This is a chapter of my childhood that is clearly just entirely missing.
Every week there were a new issue of Donald Duck, which we read, and also these pocket books with larger with more elaborate tales and stuff like that. So, yeah.
I had no idea this territory had been trodden by Disney. This is fascinating. When I grew up in Scotland, there was a cartoon called The Family Nest, which was about a whole family of monsters who lived in Loch Ness. I bet this never aired in England, and there's people listening in England just going, what? This has really happened. This was a thing. It was like extremely cheaply produced. But, you know, when you were 6 years old or whatever, it was kind of cool.
But did you know that we have our own? Look, not Loch Ness monster, obviously, but...
A fjord monster?
No, a lake monster.
Where?
Seljord.
Which is where?
Why do you keep asking me these difficult geographical questions?
Well, I thought it was pretty basic if you're going to bring this up, but yeah.
Pretty basic. Yeah, it's almost in the middle of the southern part of the country.
Big lake?
So you can drive past it if you drive from Oslo to Bergen, actually.
Right.
And it's a big lake. Seljord monster.
I found a place called Seljord. It is indeed on a lake.
Selma. It's a large snake-like lake monster, according to folklore, alleged to be a sea serpent or lindworm. Said to live in the 13 kilometers long lake Seljord in Seljord, Telemark. According to most who have seen the supposed creature, Selma closely resembles other reported lake monsters, such as Nessie of Scotland or Champ of New York. The first eyewitness accounts date back to the 18th century. Quite old. And there's also a possibly recorded video of it.
We have very bad photos, which were subsequently exposed as fakes. But the story goes back a long way, I think.
The Selma Lake Monster also features as the coat of arms in Seljord.
Nice. Is that the only place in Scandinavia that does not have the goat as a coat of arms animal?
Yeah. For comedic effect.
But so, actually, yeah. I'm sure somewhere must have a bear or a wolf or something, but Sweden is just all goats all the time. Every county you drive into in Sweden, it's another goat. Or the same goat, posing as a different goat.
I see that you have brought in some of your other national identities here.
My many and varied.
But we also have to wrap it up soon.
I can talk briefly. It's only brief. In the Czech Republic, Vodník, who is this water sprite, but sprite sounds like a very youthful, and this guy's old and smokes a pipe and hangs out in lakes and ponds and smells kind of a bit dank. And the version that I did not get as a child, but which I read about this week, says that he likes to keep the spirits of people, maybe who are dead, I'm not sure, and he keeps them in these little china cups with lids. And I guess the status of a vodník is measured by the number of china cups, I suppose, and they're very prized possessions. But when I was a child, it was just this kind of slightly froggy-looking old guy who hung around in damp places and smoked a pipe. And there's also Rusalka. I thought this was interesting because the owl in Askapot is called Rusalka, right? Or is it? Or is she? Is she called something else? Or is she called Rosarka or something like that? I can't remember. It sounded awfully like Rusalka to me. But this is kind of a... This is don't go into the water territory again. This is sort of quasi-mermaid women who will lure you into the water and then drown you. And then we have Baba Yaga, who is, I think, the youngest of three witch sisters, and whose intentions are extremely ambiguous, and who lives in the forest, in a wooden hut, on chicken feet, which I think can move around. And she flies around, instead of on a broomstick, as a British witch might fly around, she flies around in a mortar and pestle, which I thought was pretty rad. I forgot to mention, Scotland invented the house elf, for all you Harry Potter fans out there, of whom I know that we have a few. Don't look at me like that. We did.
You invented the house elf.
Yeah, so the concept of a brownie, not the kind you eat, but the kind of fairy type thing, is a Scottish one. It's this kind of spirit who skulks in the shadows of a house and overnight does the kind of menial tasks around the house. But this is the interesting thing. If you try and reward the brownie with any kind of show of gratitude, like leaving out food or whatever, they can get really offended and piss off and never come back. So it's like, I don't know why they do it. They just want to kind of be in the house and do all the chores, but they get very put out if you actually kind of acknowledge them with gratitude.
Huh. That seems somewhat...
I know. Oh, you think that's Scottish? Dig deeper, please.
It seems to be compatible with an impression of Scottish persons being a bit, you know, stingy.
I think if you open your mouth a little wider, we can get the other foot in too.
Do you have a point?
I couldn't say. I don't know. I mean, there's all the jokes, right, about Scottish people
it
being
stingy. It certainly
stingy.
Doesn't help.
There's the joke about the copper wire, which was invented by two Scotsmen fighting over a penny. There's a lot of... yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. All right.
We didn't talk as much about Norwegian mythology, but we can perhaps return to that if the mood takes.
Well, this isn't mythology.
These are fairy tales.
Yeah.
I've maybe gone towards more mythology and less fairy tales.
It's fairy tales. It's not necessarily even folklore. Well, it...
Yeah. We didn't get into all your Norse gods or anything this time around.
Yeah, I'm not reading the new Neil Gaiman book.
Right. I'm thinking about reading that. Is it available in Norwegian out of interest?
Yeah, it's called Snorri Sturlason's... It's just a retelling of the Norse myths, so you could just read them in Norwegian.
True. But it's the way he tells them, right?
Yeah. It's quite short, so...
Really?
It's a fast read, yeah.
I saw a book and it looked enormous.
Large letters.
Maybe it was the large print version.
But no, it's not that long. And we can talk about that later, I guess.
Mm.
But I think we should move into the picks of the week.
Okay. Well, we've had yours.
Yeah.
Which is the Ivo Caprinons? Am I getting that right?
Caprinons? Ivo Caprino.
Caprino?
So he had an Italian father, a Norwegian mother. And he's responsible for one of the most popular Norwegian movies ever, Flåklypa Grand Prix.
Which I haven't seen. What's it about?
It's about car racing.
Okay.
I'll just post the link in the show notes and you have to check it up yourself.
Okay. Why is it popular though?
I guess you have to see the movie, actually.
All right.
Homework.
All right.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Jan Švankmajer Alice yet?
No, I didn't.
Oh, see, this is an opportunity to talk about fairy tales. All right, we'll come back to that. My cultural pick. Bergensbana, so the Bergen Oslo train. Or is that a different
didn't
thing?
Did you pick that?
No, you picked it.
Did I?
You picked the slow TV version.
I stand corrected.
I did the real version. I actually got on the train and took this 6.5-hour journey. So I've been doing that as the night train when I've been visiting Bergen. But, of course, the real treat is to go in the daytime when it's light. And the scenery is extraordinary. And the first 4 or so hours are basically just variations on mountains, trees, lakes, waterfalls, mountains. And then you get to Hoth, so the plain in the middle, there's a sort of plateau where it's very cold, I guess near Voss, maybe a bit after. And it's where they shot Hoth for Empire Strikes Back, and it still looks like that. And even at this time of year, which is May now, it still looks like that. There's just loads and loads of snow, and it's just a big kind of icy wasteland. It's awesome. And then you go back a little bit down, and you're back to kind of mountains and waterfalls. And it's a little bit less extreme at that side, but at the Bergen end, it's extremely geographical. It's very, very fun to look at. And so I had this beautiful journey where I could kind of nerd out on the computer while looking out of the window at this fantastic scenery, and it's so good. I'm doing it again tomorrow.
Do you see any tauntauns?
I did not. I should have looked more carefully.
Hmm.
Now I'm thinking about the toilets on the train and thinking, well, I thought they smelt bad on the outside, but actually, no, they're pretty clean. It was so good. I thought about emoji live slacking it. And it would just be like evergreen tree, snow-capped mountain, heart, repeat forever. I might do that, but I might drive our colleagues insane by doing that. But it was beautiful.
Cool. And where can people find tickets for that?
We can put a link. You can come and look at the I'm sure there's a million tourist links and the train tickets links. And it's not even expensive. If you buy it in advance, you can pay like 300 kroner, which is... 30 UK pounds.
We should be sponsored by Visit Norway.
Yes. We should.
Yeah.
We should get on that.
I have forgot to pick a word of the week.
You can have mine if you like.
I have no words.
You chose mine.
Okay. Svineforeldre.
Yeah.
Swine parents.
Right.
Is this the parents of a piglet or parents being piggy?
I couldn't say. What actually happened? My husband was doing his Norwegian homework. My husband is not Norwegian. And he was reading a piece. His homework was to read a piece about farming culture in Norway in the 19th century and about how people would get married and then go and live with their in-laws. I think if a girl married a guy, she would go and live with the in-laws on their farm.
To be a house elf.
Yes, never be thanked. And eat a lot of porridge. And svigerforeldre is your parents-in-law. Oh, you're seeing where this comes from now. But my husband was thinking about farming life and was thinking also he had to answer a question about, the person was moving in with their in-laws after getting married. And he wrote the word svineforeldre, which means pig parents, which is just beautiful.
Also, I haven't heard of this compound construction before, so I had to look it up on Google, and there are two entries.
Oh, awesome. Best prior art. What does it say?
It's actually just one. It's from a blog. And translated, two persons I miss just now. My husband, who is at work. Mom and pop. But also, I miss my dear swine parents also. So it's probably a misspell.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's like little piggy parents. I miss my little piggy parents. My dear piggy parents.
Yeah. Hmm.
Svineforeldre. Do you want to invent a word of the week?
I got nothing.
Oh, this is shameful.
Yeah.
All right.
I know. Next week.
Deutschland.
Über alles. It came so naturally. Weird times.
Oh boy. I look forward to being very confused by language next week.
Again, you assume that we will interact with the German language next week.
I do. Ich möchte Deutsch sprechen.
Ja, sehr. But what should we talk about?
Well, you've been dancing around the topic of Germany. So let's talk about Germany. Let's talk about the role, the influence that Germany has had.
Let's do that.
All right.
That will be perhaps be the last episode of this podcast.
Ever.
But yeah.
Mm.
Okay. Let's unpack the Norwegian-German conundrum.
British German conundrum also.
Yeah, lots of conundrum.
Yeah, conundra? What's the plural?
Can that be my word of the week?
Sure.
Right. Takk for nå. Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.